On one side, it's heartbreaking to see what they're going through, and there's some of them have been so close to where the rest of us are, right? By the grace of God, go I. It really opens up your heart to say, this is what we need to be doing. We need to be helping widows and orphans and homeless. So it's been an incredible ministry. Tony Visconti, my barber, and I were talking about, hey, you grew up in New Hampshire. You grew up hiking all these mountains and all that. And he said, Seacoast has a hike, and I've been on a couple of them. You would really love this hike. And so that was the original foray of how I got into Seacoast. And then I went to the first meeting, and everybody knew all the words, and they had their hands in the air, and I'm like, maybe I'm not in the right place. But wound up getting a great group of brothers, band of brothers through the hike. Then Tony also invited me to a Tuesday group, and now that's the Tuesday group I help lead with Lewis Maddock. You know, it's great to be in a group, it's great to study the Lord's Word, but how can we take this to the next level? From that Tuesday group spawned a bagel ministry. It's called Bagels Under the Bridges. We wear shirts, we say Jesus. We're down there every Friday serving the homeless, and there have been some divine appointments. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. How the bagel ministry got started is such a good one. Dan Gallo, when he was up at Ruby's Bagels, which is where we get all our bagels, and he was the last one in there waiting to pick up his son at Wando. A lady walks out with two giant, clear, trash bags full of bagels. She's like, you want any bagels? He said, what are you doing with those? You're not throwing those away, are you? She said, yeah, we make them fresh every day, so these are gonna get thrown out. And he went back in his car and he thought, man, there's something going on. Came back in, he said, if I showed up every day at 1:50 when you close at 2, could I get the extra bagels? And then he said, got a group of us together and said, man, I got this bagel thing, what do we do with it? And we're like, hey, let's slice those up, make bagel sandwiches, and to deliver them to the homeless guys under the bridge. And so that's kind of how it started, and now it's just morphed into this incredible, beautiful thing where we've probably ministered to more than like 3,000 people down there, and we know, and we keep track of them and all that, and who knows whether we've made a big difference or not. I don't know if we have, but at least we've planted some seeds and done what we thought we should do. Say yes to someone that invites you to church, even if it's Easter, even if it's Christmas, even if it's a small group. If it's not right for you, that's okay. You'll find something that is, but just say yes.
Man, what a great story. Thank you, Craig, and thank you to the Bagels Under the Bridges guys. You never know what'll happen. An invitation to a men's hike, and next thing you know, there are thousands of people being served downtown. So love that, and I want to welcome all of you to Seacoast this weekend. My name is Josh Surratt. If I haven't met you, I serve as the lead pastor here, and we want to welcome all of our people who are joining us at one of our campuses, locations. I know we've recently launched Summer's Corner and just blown away by what God's doing in the Somerville area. And some of you are watching on your smartphones, ironically, with the series. I had a buddy text me yesterday and say, hey, I'm out of town. I'm watching on social media. Is that okay? I said, we'll allow that. We'll allow that. Because we're starting a series today called Digital Detox. And just being transparent with you, it's not a series that I really want to do. It's not a series that I'm going, hey, I've mastered this topic and I'm going to come teach you guys how to do it. I'll tell you right out the gate, I don't have the greatest relationship with my smartphone or my microphone, either of the two. There we go. Last Christmas, my 11-year-old daughter made a Christmas list of things that she wanted for Christmas this year. And the very top thing on her list was, please don't get me a phone. And so we looked through the list, and I'm like, Ellie, what's going on with that? And she goes, well, honestly, Daddy, I don't want what happened to the rest of you to happen to me. I mean, it felt like thankfully somebody's taking leadership in my home. It's my 11-year-old. And so we're asking her, what do you mean? She's like, it's just that we all used to play together more, and my siblings used to play with my toys with me, and they don't really do that anymore, and I don't want that to happen to me. And it really was a sobering, like, oh my gosh, indication, not of my other kids, but of us and some of the culture that we had allowed to happen within our own home as it relates to our smartphones. And then about a month later, I was at a pastor's meeting, and I spent some time with a friend of mine. His name's Darren Whitehead, and he pastors a church called Church of the City in Nashville, Tennessee. And one of the topics that we were talking about as pastors was technology and AI and all of this stuff and how are we seeing it, the good, the bad, all that stuff. And Darren had just taken his church through a 28-day digital fast. And so I was just asking a bunch of questions, and he ended up writing a book about it that released, I think, earlier this year. It's called The Digital Fast. And so a lot of the inspiration for this series came from Darren. He did a 28-day fast. We're doing a 21-day. I'm inviting you into a 21-day digital detox because we're not nearly as spiritual as they are. But it's going to be a fun journey. And I just want to say out the gates, this is a judgment-free zone. This is not a place where we're going to shame each other about that. When we go on a journey to do something like this, it's not about what we're not doing, but it's about what we want. And we want to reclaim the things that matter the most in our lives. And so that's what we're after during this series. One of you are excited about that, which is awesome. It's going to be great. So as we get started, I want you to pull out your smartphone, if you would. If you brought it in, I know some of you have a habit of not bringing your phone into church. That's awesome too. But open up on your Apple, if you have an Apple iPhone, you open up your settings app. And if you scroll down on your settings, by the way, if you have an Android, you're already kind of doing a digital fast. So don't worry about it. I'm just kidding. Actually, my Android users, I had a legit question, but you go to settings and then apps, and then there's a screen time. But if you go on your phone to your settings, scroll down to screen time and just click on that. Now, I realize it starts over on Sunday, so all of us are gonna maybe look a little better today than we normally do. But if you click on screen time and then you look at see all app activity, you'll be able to see for the week what your average screen time is on your phone. And that may be surprising to some of you. I had somebody come up to me after one of the earlier services and said, hey, I'm at like 2 hours. And I was like, well, why don't you come preach instead of me? And I had others that are in the 13 and 14 hour range that we're spending every day on our phone. All right, now put these away. That's just kind of a starting point for us to see where we are. And what I want you to know is in this series that we're doing, we're not going to rail against technology. This series is not about like anti-tech. In fact, I am so grateful for technology. There are more people watching right now through a screen than there are in this room. Some of you are watching in the chapel, which is an overflow venue for us at this site. And I'm thankful. We've seen technology leverage in some phenomenal ways. This fall, YouVersion, the Bible app, is gonna have 1 billion downloads on the Bible app. And so we celebrate what the good that technology has. So that's not what this series is about, but this series is about us learning to have a better relationship with our phones. Because most of us would say that as much as technology has helped us in some areas, it's probably taken more than it's given us. And it's created some challenges for us. And so today's title of our message is called The Price of Your Device. The Price of Your Device. And what I'm gonna do today is I'm gonna help show us some ways that the enemy has been taking from us as it relates to technology. And hopefully help us to see that what feels like a very practical thing actually has some very real spiritual implications in our lives. Whether you believe it or not, you have an enemy of your soul, and I have an enemy of my soul. And it's actually better for him if we don't believe in him, but we do. And the Bible talks a lot about the enemy. And 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 and 9 says this. It says, be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith. I don't know if you've ever watched a video of a lion hunting. I had a chance on a safari years ago, probably 15 years ago, was in Africa, and we actually did a safari day, and we happened upon a group of lions that were hunting a warthog. And it was fascinating because they were very quiet. They had this really cool communication thing that they were doing with their ears. And the warthog, we could see them. They had no idea that they were being hunted. but the lions did. Now, in this particular case, one of the lions jumped the gun and went a little bit early, and the warthog got away, which was good. I hope we're the warthog in this scenario. But lions, when they hunt, they're very quiet, they're very sneaky until the moment that they want to pounce. And the enemy of our soul is prowling around and looking for someone to devour. So what is his strategy? I'm glad you asked. Jesus actually gave it to us. In John chapter 10, which by the way is a conversation that he's having about the good shepherd, and he calls himself the good shepherd, we're the sheep, and a good shepherd protects, and a good shepherd guides, a good shepherd cares for, and makes sure that the sheep are protected from the enemy that would try to get them. And that's the heart and the spirit of this message, is that I'm trying to be a good shepherd to guide not only my own family, but to kind of bring us all in to this conversation. And here's what he says. It's a very familiar verse in John 10, chapter 10. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Don't get the wrong idea that this series is about us just limiting technology. It's an invitation into the life that Jesus has for us, because most of us are being robbed of it. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. The Greek word that's used for the word steal is a word that we would pronounce klepto. Can you say that with me? Klepto. Anybody know what word comes from that? Kleptomaniac. Kleptomaniac. And a kleptomaniac is somebody who, it's in their nature to steal things. It's an involuntary urge to steal things. I had a friend in high school who's a kleptomaniac. I found out about it when we went to a convenience store together, and we walked in, and he was awesome, very polite to the people around them, very polite to the clerk at the store, paid for the stuff that we were buying. And then we walk out of the store and he goes, "Hey dude, you want a candy bar?" I was like, and he pulls a candy bar out of his pocket. I was like, when did you get that? So I got it while I was having a very pleasant conversation with that clerk. And a kleptomaniac is somebody who just takes these small things, steals them from time to time. It's part of their nature. The Greco-Roman culture actually celebrated some of these people because they were so subtle in how they would take from us. And that's the word that Jesus used in describing the thief, the enemy. He's not holding us up at gunpoint, going, "Hey, give me all of your money." He's just subtly taking from us in these little moments, and we don't even know what's happening. Blissfully aware. The only way a clerk or a store is gonna know that they've been stolen from is when they look at their P&L sheet and they realize, wait, something's off here. Or maybe they go look at the security cameras and go, "Oh wow, we've been being robbed." And I hope that what we do today is almost look through the lens of a security camera of our souls to see the enemy and where he's been taking from us. Because perhaps there's no device that has given him more opportunity to subtly swipe from us as this 4-inch glowing rectangle that we carry around in our pockets every day. Ephesians 5:11 says, "Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, rather expose them." So let's expose the enemy and some of his tactics. Tristan Harris, who is a former product philosopher at Google, framed up what's at stake in this way. He said, "The tech industry is at an arms race for people's attention." He went on to say that as a general rule with most of technology, it is intentionally designed and engineered for distraction and addiction because that's where the money is at. Economists call it the attention economy. Organizations know if they can get our attention, they're gonna get our money, which means if they can get our anger and our rage, if they can get our lust, if they can get our focus, that they know there's a lot of money to be made. Seth Godin points out that your phone doesn't work for you, but you work for your phone. The phone works for Apple or Google or Facebook, and we wanna believe that we are the product, but what is being sold, or we wanna believe that the phone is the product, but the reality is we are the product. And what is being sold is our attention. It's being monetized. Big tech knows, and again, we're not railing against them. We just have to understand what's going on, is that we are the product, that they're selling our attention because that's where the money's at. They design products and algorithms that cultivate digital addiction. We all get it. How many times have you received a text and you go and you open up, you read the text, maybe you respond to it, right? Then maybe you switch over to the weather app. I'm gonna just check that, see what's going on here. And then let's see what's happening on the gram, right? Open up Instagram. You see a suggested reel of a mountain biker on a hilltop and then a hang glider. And then you see a group of guys fighting on a golf course. A guy gets thrown into a pond. You know what I'm talking about. You saw that. And then you got a quote from Dr. Phil, and then there's a Brandon Lake concert clip, and then there's a magic trick with an egg, and then a scene from Seinfeld, and then the best pickleball point you've ever seen in your life goes back and forth, and then there's an audition from American Idol that you see, a little clip of that, and on and on and on, and then all of a sudden you look up and you realize 54 minutes has gone by since you replied to that text message. Anybody relate to that? Am I the only one that's okay? So this is how it works. We get sucked down this wormhole of worthless, mindless trivia. Psalms 119, verse 37 says, "Turn my eyes from looking at worthless things and give me life in your ways." Even though this is gonna be a painful series and our flesh is gonna resist a lot of what we're talking about, it's the first series I've ever announced, and we had like applause breakout because our souls know that we need to live differently here, that there's gotta be a better relationship. Average screen time, by the way, I know you looked at yours. Average screen time for an American globally is 6 hours and 40 minutes every day. Some of y'all are like, I'm above average, doing well. Gen Z averages over 9 hours a day on their phone. You remember when the average workday was 8 hours a day? So more than a workday, we're just getting this constant barrage of content and it's distracting us and it's taking our focus. Just so you know the scale of it, our world population today is 7.96 billion in the last stats that I could find. Smartphones, there's 6.92 billion smartphones. 87% of the world has a smartphone right now, which is wild. It's the fastest, I mean, think about this, automobile industry. From the time the first automobile hit the market, it took almost 90 years to get to 90% of people owning a car. This has happened. The Apple first launched the iPhone, it was 2007. Anybody get the first version of it? You guys remember that? 2007. And so in about 15 years, 90% of the world has come on board with this technology. And so it's happened to us fast, which is part of why I'm like, hey, it's a no judgment zone. We didn't know all of the impact that would come through all of this technology. The problem is now we do. Now a lot of data has come out to show us some of the impacts of what's happened because of technology. Today, the average American, our attention span is down to 8 seconds. 8 seconds that we can stay focused on something before we get distracted. We start thinking about something else. Now for context, goldfish have an attention span of 9 seconds. Look it up. We're losing to goldfish with our attention span. And it's having an impact on our lives. The enemy of our soul wants us to live distracted, sedated, numb lives, subversively, secretly stealing our time and our attention. If you knew that somebody was scoping out your house to rob you, you would do something about it. I remember I used to wait tables downtown when I was in college, and a little restaurant, breakfast and lunch restaurant. Our busiest days were Saturdays. And we'd work shifts on Saturdays, and it was slammed. You had a line out the door, and mostly cash transactions would happen. And I remember a bunch of tables got up to leave and there were only two servers in the restaurant. And we were back in the kitchen coming out to clean off tables. And the hostess came up and said, "Josh, somebody just walked through here and stole all the cash off of the tables." I was like, "Well, what did he look like?" They described him. "Where did he go?" "That way." "Guess what? Me and that other server, we left that restaurant. We ran two blocks down the road and we got our money back." Because when you're being stolen from, it's like, man, you're gonna do something to stop it. By the way, might not have been the wisest thing. Thankfully, they didn't have a weapon at that time. But when you know you're being stolen from, you're gonna fight back and you're gonna take from it. And so there's five ways that I wanna show you. I could have done 25 ways that the enemy is stealing from us right now as it relates to our smartphones. And by the way, during this season series, we're bringing back the old school outline sheet. So your campuses, you may have gotten an outline sheet. If you're under about 18, this is paper and there are pens and you can actually like take notes. And so you may wanna do that, and we will still have all of our notes available on our app. And again, we're not anti-technology, but I thought it'd be fun to bring it back a little bit during this series. Five ways that we're being robbed from by the enemy. Number one, he's stealing our connection to God. Stealing our connection to God. The enemy's primary goal for us is to separate us from the God who loves us, who created us, who wants to give us life and life abundantly. And one of the biggest ways that we're being taken from subtly is our relationship with God. See, our phones fill the silence where God is speaking. Prayer requires us to be still. Scripture requires focus from us. And when we can't focus for more than 8 seconds, we're missing out on a lot that God has for us. Psalms 46:10 says, "Be still and know that I am God." And instead, we're being still and knowing what our third cousin had for dinner last night. We're being robbed. Many of us struggle to find time to spend with God. But when we contrast that with the amount of time that we're spending on our devices, we realize, wow, maybe there's actually more time than I thought. And again, I'm not arguing against technology. What I'm gonna do as we invite you into a 21-day digital fast, we're not gonna prescribe exactly what you should do. But one of the things that I'm gonna do is I'm gonna reclaim the first part of my day for him. And when I opened up my screen time, somebody asked me after service, "What's your screen time?" I said, "That's none of your business, okay? That's for me and my small group to work through." But what I did is opened up, it'll tell you where you're spending your time. And on mine, my Bible app was number four or five. And so for me, the very easy decision for me to make during this fast is every app that was above my Bible is gonna be deleted off my phone for the next 21 days. In fact, I'm gonna try to delete all of the distraction apps off of my phone. You have utility apps, weather, maps, I'm keeping those things. Distraction apps, games, social media, email, dare I say. Did you know you can still check your email on a computer a couple times a day? And did you know that the most productive people on the planet would say that checking it all day long is not helpful for them, it's actually hurtful? So I'm gonna delete that app. One of the things that's happened over the last 15 years is our work and personal and family time has just kind of completely come together. So we're gonna try to reclaim it. But I'm gonna try to get rid of those things that are stealing away my time with God. I love the Bible app. I use it every day. Some of y'all may wanna go analog. That's awesome too. I find that the Bible app helps me to highlight some things. And I've got a buddy that's going through the same reading plan that I am. And every morning around 7 o'clock, a text comes through or we're encouraging each other. But let's just recognize we're being stolen from spiritually. We're also our relationships. Second thing that's being stolen is our relationships. We're together, but we're not really together. This speaks to what my daughter was talking about. We're in the same room, but we're all scrolling on our own devices. 50% of married couples say that screen time is having a negative impact on their intimacy. The other 50% didn't hear the question because they were looking at cat videos on their phone. Because the reality is, it's probably all of us have noticed a decline in intimacy and connection with our spouses or with our close friends because of technology. You know, we all looked at our screen time. I would just say, how much of our conversations have we missed with our children or with our friends because we've just been mindlessly scrolling? And so it's Connect weekend, and one of the most common reasons why people would say, well, I don't go to a small group. It's not that I don't want to. It's just that I don't have time. We're going to give you that time back during this series because we can all find an hour or two a week to prioritize relationships. And even I would encourage you as we jump into small groups to share that screen time with some people that love you and that are going to help you to have a better relationship with our phones. My oldest is a senior this year in high school, and I'm not going to allow him to take this last year, him being the enemy of time that we have with our kids. We're going to reclaim it. It's been stealing our connection to God, our relationships. We've been being robbed of our peace. Our smartphones are taking our peace. You know, when the iPhone came out in 2007, we didn't have a lot of information on how apps like social media and distraction apps are actually affecting us and our mental health, but now we do. The CDC has reported that in the US, the prevalence of depression in adolescents and adults age 12 and older has increased by over 60% in the past decade. The number one factor that's attributed to is screen time. It's taken our peace. Many of us know we're struggling with anxiety and maybe hadn't realized how much of an impact. There's so much that's been written. Jonathan Haidt's one of the leading guys that talks about this, and he wrote a book called The Anxious Generation. And basically, there's a correlation. We are giving our kids way less freedom in the physical world and way more freedom in the digital world, and it's destroying them. It's taking their peace. And it's counterintuitive. We're helicopter parents with all the physical dangers, but we're leaving them wide open to the attacks of the enemy online. And you know who's getting affected the worst? It's adolescent girls. Their brain is being rewired. And again, there's so much science. I cut out about 90% of my stats, so you're welcome for that. But there's so much information on this. We have a website, seacoast.org/digital detox. It's got a lot of resources and information that may be helpful to you. But the teenage girl, most experts are saying teenagers at all, men and women, shouldn't be on social media until they're 16 years old at minimum. Because what's happening is they're being barraged with this comparison stuff. Did you know the number one requested gift for 11-year-old girls is skincare products? And again, I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to, but why? Because they're being fed that they're not good enough, that they need, yeah, there's some aspect of little girls wanting to be moms that's great, but y'all, it's having a major impact, and it's rewiring our brains. And I've got two kids that we didn't have this information on, and so we're working hard. And again, when we're being robbed, we don't go, well, I guess I missed the boat. No, you go, all right, we're gonna have a conversation. And maybe that just looks like you with your teenage kids going, hey, I'm starting to understand how this is impacting. Let's talk together on how we, because guess what? They want it as much as we do. They're seeing and knowing the impact it's having on them as much as we are. And so it's stealing our peace. It's stealing our innocence. The average age of the first exposure to pornography is now 11 years old. 11 years old. Our kids don't have to go looking for it. It's coming for them. I've shared with you about my struggle that I had with pornography that I thank God early in my 20s, it came to light in my marriage. And we've got some incredible groups that are launching around pure desire and helping men and women live in freedom in this area. But when I was growing up with the struggle, if I wanted to struggle with pornography, I had to go to a convenience store, pray to God that my mom or my aunt wasn't there, and have enough courage to say, hey, can I buy that magazine back there? I mean, there was a lot that you had to go to. The barrier of entry was high. And now the barrier of entry is in our pocket every single day of the week. And so our freedom, our innocence, and then the last one that I have is our freedom is being taken from us. Our freedom. A lot of this comes down to notifications and the technology that comes in with that. I don't know if you've ever been to Las Vegas. I went to run a race there with my wife, and it just blew me away walking through the casinos in Las Vegas and people just sitting at slot machines and their eyes are glazed over and they're just pulling that lever, just hoping for that next dopamine hit on their brain, the next jackpot. Did you know that same technology is the same dopamine hit that hits the dopamine center of our brain every time a notification goes off on our smartphones? Just bzz, bzz. I've had like four of them while I've been here preaching. I'm like, can y'all hold on? I need to check these. No, it's one of the things I would encourage you is during this 21-day digital detox is silence all of your notifications other than maybe your text messages and your phone. Let's make our smartphones dumb again. And you'll be shocked. The average number of times people pick up their phone in a day is 123 times a day that we pick it up. Just dopamine hit, dopamine hit, dopamine hit. And so we're gonna detox. And we're gonna allow some space back into our lives to be able to connect with God in a meaningful way. What do we do about it? Spent the last 20, 25 minutes talking to you about the problem. We're gonna throw our phones into the ocean. That might be good for about 2 minutes. And then there's this actual factor. It's called nomophobia. It's the fear of being away from your phones. We'd all get you know, it would kick back in. We're gonna become Amish maybe. We'll all start making our own clothes together. It'd be a fun journey to go on. No. No, but there's got to be somewhere between addicted and Amish that's a healthy place for us to live with our technology. And I'm not railing against the Amish. We love you guys. We're not suggesting you throw away your phone. We're not suggesting you do a digital media fast for the rest of your life. We're not suggesting that you abandon your responsibilities at work for the next 21 days. But we are suggesting that you take 21 days to self-observe what happens in you, in your relationship with God, in your family, with your kids. What happens when we intentionally reduce the noise of the world and look to lean in and replace it with our relationship with God? Four things we're gonna do. I'm gonna give them to you real quick. We're gonna detach. It's gonna be hard. I'm just warning you. Detox is not a pretty thing. Jesus didn't have a smartphone, but he had to withdraw. It says he often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. We're gonna detach. We're gonna follow what Jesus did. But you know, I'm gonna reduce the noise. And you have that conversation with your friends and family. What do you need to pull back from? What apps do you need to delete from your phone? Silence the notifications. I got rid of the news notifications in 2020 because I noticed what an impact it was having on me, and I never brought them back. And guess what? It hasn't affected me in a negative way. I mean, I didn't know Cracker Barrel was going down until a friend told me. So I had to kind of, you know, but you find out the things that matter, right? I mean, you're gonna be okay if you don't know every issue that the world is happening. And so we're gonna detach. Then we're gonna discover. As we detach, we're gonna discover. Discover some stuff about us. Some it'll be good, some it'll be hard. Some of us are gonna discover that we've been addicted. 80% of people, according to the CDC, are actually addicted to their phones. I love Proverbs 25, verse 2. It says, it's the glory of God to conceal a matter. To search out a matter is the glory of kings. What does that mean? Is God hiding stuff from us? Yeah, a little bit. It's kind of like a scavenger hunt I did for my 16-year-old. We got him tickets to go see his favorite soccer team when he was 16th birthday, and Jenna helped us hide a bunch of stuff all over where we were, the property. And the joy wasn't in hiding things. The joy was watching him discover. It's watching him find things. And I believe God is gonna just delight in watching us discover the depths of what he has for us out of his word and our relationships. Even in like the non-spirit, maybe we'll have some game nights as a family and rediscover the joy that he has for us. The third thing we're gonna do is delight. We're gonna delight. You've heard of FOMO, the fear of missing out. We're gonna start talking about JOMO around here, the joy of missing out. Be like, no, I didn't know that, and I'm so much better off for it. Thank you. I didn't know you guys had a party and didn't invite me. I'm blissfully, oblivious to some of that stuff. And we're gonna rediscover just delighting in God and delighting in being in the present company, not being so distracted. And then we're gonna determine. And as we go away from this 21 days, the goal was that we would do like what Daniel did. Daniel was taken out of Israel into a culture that was very much running against the grain of his faith. But he said that, says he resolved not to defile himself. And we're gonna walk away just going, you know what, God, we're gonna resolve to do things a little bit differently with this. And again, it won't be a forever fast, but it'll be a eye-opening for us as we discover the ways the enemy's been taking, and we're gonna take it back. Church, the enemy has been robbing us for too long. The journey that I'm inviting you into is a journey of connection with God. It's a journey into connection, into meaningful relationships. It's restoring the peace that some of us have been missing. It's protecting the innocence and purity of our kids. And it's living in the freedom that Jesus died so that we could experience. So I invite you onto this journey together. It's gonna be hard, but we're gonna be in it together. We're gonna see God do incredible things in our midst. Let's pray as we close. God, I thank you so much that you're a life-giving God. Jesus, I thank you that you came to give us life and life abundantly. And Lord, for many of us, we're not experiencing that right now. Lord, we can just relate to ways that we've been being stolen from. And so we rebuke the thief of our souls who comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And Lord, we surrender ourselves again to you. Would you bring life to us? I pray that this 21 days would be a life-giving season for us, where you would speak to us. Some of us will hear you in ways we haven't heard maybe ever or a long time. That you would restore peace. Lord, that you would restore freedom. And that you would do more than we could ask or imagine during this season. So we give you our lives. We surrender our smartphones to you. Would you help us live in a healthier way as it relates to the ways that we've been taken from? In Jesus' name, amen.